Chapter 11. Dunter the Moonlight. They sped faster into the breeze, a calder edge on it now. They went along winning up the road to the house and finally gave up looking back to see if their folk was maybe coming after them. "We better put our bikes in the shade rather as leaving them fort," Robbie said, wheeling his in through the grind. George took off his rucksack and set it down upon the ground and followed him and Kirsty to the shade. Once they were there and the bike stowed away, Robbie pointed out the bung of gear he was left earlier. Atween the three of them, they carried it out to the grind at the front of the house, ready to tack down to the boat. Robbie and Kirsty nipped up the stair and changed into their warm clothes, then spouted back down and outside. George nabbed his rucksack and Kirsty set off to fetch the life jackets, leaving Robbie standing looking out over the vo, thinking about the big expedition afore them. The only sound he could hear was the plipsing of a shoulder that was trying to chase the lamb from its nest and the sprechs of a heap of turks a bit further along the banks. There weren't even a purr of wind now. The sea was fairly slight and looked as black as pitch. For a' that, they were a lock of light, and he thought it would be nae bother to find their way by the north end of Greista and along to the shore near the Ha. When he first came up with the idea of tagging the boat, he'd felt happy about it, but when they were done at the dance, he kind of had twatty doubts. Was it ower dangerous and ower far to row? For by the fact that he felt he could handle the boat, even in the darkening, he was afflicted by the thought of getting them aye into trouble or danger. Kirsty came round the corner for the house, hiding the three life jackets and a flask of tea she was made up, and set it down upon the briggy stains afore him. "No, I think yon's hit," Robbie said, surveying aad was afore them. "George, dus gotten warm clays, a blinky and the sandwiches of thy rucksack. Kirsty, dus gotten thy clays and the flask of tea and his to the map and the copy of the poem as well." She hauled them both up, then packed them in George's rucksack afore he buckled it up. Robbie got on. "I hear blinky, the ladder of the shade, the shovel and trowel, and we a' have rubber boots on, and the robbers already done at the boat." He looked at the twa of them. "I think that's worse." They opened the grind and atween them got a' the gear down the park to the dunter, Robbie and George tacking the ladder atween them and Kirsty wondering qua they were gaan that they might need sic a thing. "You never came," was George's answer. There was still a braw orange glood to the northwest sky as they fastened up their life jackets, got the nail in the boat and stowed their gear in the rope as best they could. George laid aft the burp for the metal loop at the head of the noose and coiled it up before setting it down in the bow. Then him and Robbie got to the starn and with a count of three got the boat down over the ape stains to the edge of the water. There were a braw good flood with a full moon, so it wasn't that far they had to drag her, but Kirsty was sure that everybody in the place would hear them had sounded that loud on such a peaceful night. Afore they shoved the boat into the sea, they fetched the ladder down and got it stowed away, hanging out over the bow at an angle. They were ready. "Kirsty, is thou wanting to jump in now afore we shove off?" Robbie asked her, thinking that would be the easiest way. She sat up with the taft and swung her legs in over, being careful not to weep the seat. "Yeah, we'll need the extra weight at the stern to help us win off," George said, gaffing. Kirsty gied him in her looks. "Well, then we better swap, fat clutch of doers," she said back, gaffing too. George wasn't want we were speaking back, and Robbie picked up on it. "Thou's getting as good as thou gies now, George," he said, seeing his red face. "Come on, let's go." Weighing up at every side of the bow, they got the dunter further into the water and span around. George clam aboard first, then Robbie shoved them clear and went in, shacking the water off of his last boot afore setting them down upon the taft and sliding the oars out through the rowlocks. He started to pull up the oars, and even with a' the weight they had aboard, they began to make good speed. They weren't speaking muckle, keeping their voices down in case anybody by the shore heard them, for they kent that soon travelled weel lower water. We knew their inn was gotten used with a dimmer light or the humming, and they could see brawly weel. "Are we gaan to ging round the north point of Greista?" George asked, looking ahead. Yeah, I think so, Robbie said, speaking as he rowed. I looked at it by the map earlier and it's about the same distance. As they came closer to Grista, there were a raft of dunters ahead of them that smoothed out of the way. And on Grista, another shelter was making a carry-on. The night seemed that muckle quieter and calmer as the daytime was. Ah, the animals and birds taking piss now after the stir of their day. They were blithe of their warm fleeces, although Robbie was sweating with rowing. Look at yon, Kirsty was pointing a star. What is it? The water was glancing with pretty flags of luminous green mats, darting about the wake. Living and dying at the blink of the een, leaving a trail ahead of them like thousands of stars. Oh yeah, I see it, said Robbie, as George turned to look too. Yon's Maril. I've never seen sae muckle o' afore. Wow! As they rowed along, they spat with what they were going to do when they best got there, for they weren't really planned muckle, either it's just the wind to the heart. You think, should we ging up to the ha first, see if there anything we didn't see afore? Robbie asked, thinking about their first trip there. George turned round and lay back up at the ladder. I dunna ken, he said. I mean, we're learning mair for the poem at Dauphin as we did at the ha. And athing of the poem points to this watch tour, I would say. Yeah, I suppose it was right, Robbie said, heading the oars clear of the water atween strokes. Kirsty butted in. I'm no that keen about going to the ha at night for it gave me the heebie-jeebies. She burst her arms about herself and gave a pretty shiver. Robbie, starting to row again, agreed with him. If we're reading the poem right, then this watch tour is where we need to be. They thought that the brooks of the watch tour would be easy enough to find, especially when they had the map to help. George suggested they should here look at the map where Blinky is to go along. Robbie didn't want attention drawn to them, so they agreed to wait till they went nearer the shore where there were less chance of being seen. Once they went around the north end of Grista, Robbie and George swapped over, being careful as they changed seats. Robbie could see the bight had laid into the banks down afore the ha. And as they came according closer, he could make out the outline of the ha, dead ahead. It came to his mind that he didn't ken if they were anywhere to land with a boat. That could lay their plans in anchor, for if they were nae wide to win ashore but the face of the banks, then they were headed. It would be all dangerous. Just at that moment, as he looked at the head, he saw the moon sheening down upon the water, and it looked like there were a pretty gyoh just to the left of the ha. That would be perfect. He pointed it out to George and steered him the right way. It looked like a shingly beach, but there was something black like between the beach and them. At first he thought it was a bar and warren did or twa. But it's moving, Kirsty said. Look, that's no a bar, it's a selkie. There were only about 3 boat lengths away from him, and with a snush he smoothed it under the surface. The keel hit the shingle with a scrape and the dunter came to a stop. They were not as soon to be heard, either as the corner wake for the boat washing up. None of them moved a muscle, as if lapping something to happen. Then the quiet was broken with George sliding the oars in through the rowlocks. I'll ging ashore and Hall was in a pretty bit, Robbie harked. Bite where you were now. He stepped pretty wise out of side, the water half way up his boots. With the weight of him out of the boat, had lifted the bow off of the shingle, so it was easy for him to haul her in closer, grounding her again. The 3 of them dragged her slowly up the shingle, till the starn was clear of the sea. The pretty gyoh they were drawn up in was a kind of horseshoe shape with low banks about 6 feet high and a fence to each side of it. That's a great spot, Robbie, George said, harking as well. Nobody would see us here. Will we get out the gear out of the boat, no? Why are we whispering? Kirsty said in a low voice. Is there anybody here? The 3 of them looked at one another and kind of pistered and gaffed as they saw who silly it was to be speaking in low voices when they weren't another hoose for miles about them. No, I suppose we're safe in York, Robbie said in a normal voice. We can likely speak a while. Will we here look at the map now and try and work out where we are? We canna be far for the watch tour. Kirsty opened George's rucksack, wrestled about inside and came out with a map. George reckoned in for his blinky and snuck it down. She knew that put the map at Kirsty was laid out by the shingle. They found the hare and the watchtower, and Robbie traced his finger along the banks till he found what he thought was the gyo they were in. Robbie got on. "This denkie looks like the right shape for this gyo, a pretty cut out by a shingly beach." He turned and looked out over the vaux and pointed. "See, yonder in the moonlight, yon scary half by, well, that's exactly in line with the south point of Greaster." He got back to the map and, using his blinky as a straight edge, said, "And see here, that's on the map too, so we might be here." The other twa agreed with him, and Robbie was chuffed that he was brought out to his position and that it made sense. The map showed they were nae distance afar for the watchtower, and it wasn't that muckle farther to the ha. The fence line was even marked by the map too, so it'd be easy to follow back to the boat. "I think we'll just tack the rucksack, you know, and maybe the shovel," Robbie said, laughing out of the boat, "and going up to the watchtower to see what's there." It was easy to find a way out of the gyo, for there were 20 sheep's gates up and down it, so they climbed up and over the tap. A ewe and her lambs was roused to the sleep. The lambs nyarmin but biting claws to their mither as she hurpled off for a bit mair pace some other way. The watchtower was up at the other side of the fence, but most of the wire was lying about the ground and only about every third post was standing upright. It wasn't a muckle or baft to win over it. They saw nearly right away where the watchtower was, a great rummel of stains up in a pretty knoll no far for them. The biggest bit looked like what was being a gable end. It was barely their height now, the stains spread over the face of the earth round about it. When they went there, they set their bags and the shovel down upon the ground and looked around and about it. "So this is where the old laird used to watch the fishing boats fae," Kirsty said, looking out to sea. "They'd never have been able to ging anywhere either to land their fish, for I think you can see for miles fae here. Even in the darkening, they could scrime the horizon and 20 lights for fishing boats working out by." "Yeah, lairds manna hae a lock of poor danny days," George said. "Nae wonder this Archie fellow was that fair to him. And even we are that poor in money, he really wanted whatever it was that Archie fan," Robbie said, kicking a stain over his foot. "And according to his poem, he hoided it somewhere near Wiz." "King," Kirsty skirled. "It doesn't seem real, does it? I hope it's not just a prank of some kind. No worth getting grounded for if it is. Do you think it might be?" "Nah, can't be, surely," George said. "I mean, why are we going to add that bother?" "No, it's definitely no wind-up. I'm certain of that," Robbie said. "Here, let's hear a look at yon poem again and see if it makes any mere sense." He snuck it on his blankie and hauled out the folded bit of paper for George's rucksack and started to read. The tither twa gathered about him. They read over the lines again. "Look," Robbie said with his finger up at the words. "This bit here, a twin, his grit ha, well, that's yonder." He was pointing up the hull to the laird's ha, only the length of a foot by a pitch of war. "And where the doo goes, that has to be the doo's cave marked by the map. It's just over here at the bank's brow." He wandered 20 steps and pointed. "Do you agree?" "Yeah, it man be," George said, excitement in his voice. "And then see, for the place that he watches his own fishing fleet, well, that's right here where we're standing, this watch tour." "That's the very place," said Kirsty, jumping up and down. "But before we can to find what differ it is, if it's underways, we'll never be able to dig it out. Say, what can we do?" Robbie was been thinking about this and realised the same thing. He turned to the other twa. "We had in mind that Archie was hoided whatever he found for the laird, but the laird was biding here, so Archie wouldn't have been able to hawk a hole and bury it, for anybody could have seen where it was. The only access to this bit of land would have been with his boat, so he might have landed it by sea." He was quiet for a minute and then carried on. "I think that whatever it was he found, he might have hoided it in the cave, the Doon's cave, just down over this banks here." George and Kirsty looked at him, then at the poem, then at the bank's brow. A smile appeared on both their faces. "Robbie, I think it was absolutely right," George said, spanging about a bit of stains. "It makes perfect sense. Archie stowed away whatever he found under his feet, but it's just down yonder, in the cave. He would never have risked gyan about the laird's land, I mean, to hide it at a watchtower or that. He would have been seen, said, his to be the cave, just as the poem says." Kirsty thought it made sense too, and the three of them gaffed and jumped about for a start. They were solved the riddle that Robbie and Kirsty's relation was written down at that year's for sign. They could hardly believe they were cracked. They calmed down again after a minute or two, minding that the most awkward bit was still ahead, finding exactly where the cave was and getting into it. Robbie stood his length, looking at the bank's brow. Come on, let's go for a scout of the banks. The boys started walking, but Kirsty begged where she was. She didn't like the idea of standing up at the edge of the banks at any time, let alone when they weren't that much light. As they came nearer the edge, Robbie and George could see the sea easy and yach with a moon upon it. Even the reebs of scum was shining up clear. They could smell the sea too, the rotten wire and the birds that was nesting round about. They all got closer up with their hands and knees, looking down over the banks. They weren't that high, but and yoked to miracle themselves if they rummeled down the face. See, yonder, George pointed. The fraud at the Shermel. There's the pretty beach. Yonder'll be the way into the cave. Yeah, I think it was right, Robbie agreed, thinking it matched the map and was the only obvious place it could be. I do not think we can win down yonder, though, for it's perilously steep, but thanks to. What about the ladder, George wondered. Would that help? The ladder's only about 12 feet long, George, and I doubt the banks is a lot more as that, but it might be handy for I that. Hey, what about yonder? See, up at the far side, there are a bit of a dip of the banks where Trenky running down to the beach. Yon might be the best way. George saw what he meant and was upon his feet and heading down that way aber to fin out. It'll be easy in York to win down, Robbie, and I can see into the mouth of the cave even for here. Robbie stood alongside him and saw it would be nae bother to window. Without wasting any more time, they headed back to where Kirsty was to tell her the news. Oh, that's great, she said. Will it be easy to wind back up again? Yeah, it looks fine, Kirsty, Robbie told her. Hey, what if we do fin something big? We'll never get it dragged up the banks. We would need to get the boat in. Well then, why do we not just tack the boat around now if that's going to be easier, George suggested. It's only a pretty bit farther than we've come already, and it would be easier for us than traipsing up and down the banks. Robbie looked at the idea. That's what we'll do, he said, and the rope and the ladder is in the boat anyway if we need them. I'm just wondering though, I mean, I've heard you pat yonder that time ago, just in a cave, what's the chance of it still being there? Think for many gills has been in that time. I cannot see if anything would survive. Well, if we stand here a night, we never can, said Kirsty. Rest you there. Gain pretty wise, George added, already upon his way to the bight where the boat was drawn up. Robbie followed, leaving his doots ahunt him. Hey, listen, Robbie said. We're seen there a way down the bank, say, why does any of us no gain down that way with a blinky to shine for the boat? George looked at them, then at Kirsty, then back to Robbie. By any of us, I take it to means me, he kind of gaffed, no need to answer. Well, it's no going to be me ogging down the banks on me own, Kirsty said, falling her arms. That's all right, I don't mind. Kirsty, do better ging in the boat with the Admiral here, and I'll see you there, George said, burling round the blinky he was carrying and testing it. Come on then, the night is wearing on. And with that, he set after the bank's brew, snucking the blinky on and off as he could. Okay, we'll see thee there, Robbie roared after him, and him and Kirsty took off. In a minute, they were stepping over the brooks of the fence and down over to where the boat was lying, the moon sheening off our gunnels and wheat oars. Atween the twa of them, they got the dunter hauled down and into the water. Kirsty put the eft taft as Robbie shoved off, starring first. He kent it wasna far to ging, but was blithe aye the same that George was taught to ging down with the blinky and help them out be flashing the light. They were just the prettiest bit mere swell running as they went round the point, but it was still a fine night. We knew they couldna see a single horse light of a, only the lights for 20 fishing boats that was lying away off. George was wind on the banks nae bother of a, either his gluffin a mad was sitting up at the gate down. For a mercy, it wasna in of the spewings, for that would not have been good. It was mostly girse and gravel by the way down, then a pretty bit where he had to slide down 20 feet over rocks before jumping down onto the shingly beach. It suddenly struck him that it was a bit spooky standing up at this unken beach on his own in the mirkning. He didn't want to turn on Luca hunt him at the mouth of the cave, for it was that dark. Just be that, he saw the flat bottom coming round the point. With a sigh of relief, George hulled the blinky afore him and snuck at it on. There he is, said Kirsty, seeing the light, for Robbie was looking back, rowing. He's one doon all right. Robbie glanced over his shoulder and turned a pretty bit to starboard, then gave twa or three powerful strokes of the oar to get them as far up the shingle as he could. George got his hand about the bow at the same time as the keel skirted over the bottom, and Robbie quickly hauled in the oars, spanging over the gunwale to give George a hand. This beach was a piece steeper as the inn they were getting into first, and the Staines was a lot bigger, but was still nae bother to haul her up. The three of them stood and looked at the muckle black hull that was at the back of the beach. There were nae doubt about it. This was the entrance to the cave, and it looked dark and gloffysome. Gee whiz, Robbie said, taking a couple of steps closer. This is it. He turned to the other twa, his back to the cave. Say, are we going to get in? He turned to look at the cave again. Do we have anything we need? The look on his face suggested he wasn't sure. Will, the rope of the boat and the ladder, but that's what all we hae, George said. I don't think what else we need. How many blinkies do we hae? Kirsty asked, seeing that George still had his in. I'm no wanting to be stuck in a cave if the battery's getting flat. She gave a shiver at the talk to it. Yeah, that's a good point, Kirsty. Is the other ring in the rucksack? Robbie asked. Yeah. Oh no, George said. Oh, I'm getting left it up at the watch door. What the fool, I forgot. Ah, put it when you twa get down to the boat. Blast that. I'll nip up the banks and ging and get it, for the map and flask is in there too. We might be blind with a cup of tea. Here, tak me blankie, he handed it to Robbie. Okay, Robbie said, we'll just wait here till Doug gets back. Dunna be lang. I wanna be, George said. Already over the rocks he had to climb up. I want to get in yon cave. They watched him pulling himself up over a rock and then nearly running up the trenchy to the top of the banks, just the odd hand coming up to steady himself as he could. Robbie snickered on the blinky and started wandering up to the mouth of the rocky hull. The big circle of light fate picked up the roof of the cave and the shingle at the bottom, but he couldn't see right into the back of it. He keep it whacking pretty wise and was aware of Kirsty right next to him. I wonder how far in the cave goes, Kirsty hearkened. It must be a great piece. Yeah, it man be, Robbie agreed, sheening the light about, then back into the black of the cave. If it's big enough to hide something in, then it must ging. He wet spicking as the blinky picked up something ahead. Kirsty yogged had his arm, the edge closer. Look, what is yon? Robbie's een was adjusting to the dark, now that they weren't a simuckle moonlight. As they went closer, they could scream could look at like a solid stone. Wah! That's the back of the cave, Kirsty's voice came out in a pretty squeak. See! Robbie saw that she was right. That was the back of the cave. He moved the light from left to right and it shared the hill size of the cave, nae mair as three boat lengths into the banks. His heart sank with what he saw, for it was nothing like the size he thought it would be and totally exposed to the sea. He could tell fine well that they were nae wide they could be anything higher the wa, when he could see it a' for him. I dunna believe it, he said, as Kirsty took the blankie out of his hand. It must be the wrang cave. He was being sure that it was the right thing, for they were funnit up at the map, and this was the only place it could have been. He set him down up at the shingle, picking up a couple of stones and bailing them in the water, fairly dumpiest. Kirsty was still wandering about with a blankie, looking a' about the cave. Hey, Robbie, she shouted, sheening the light up the way. Look at this. Up on top of the banks, George was dighting the gravel off his hands as he made for the brooks of the watch tour as fast as he could. He was spied where his rucksack was lying and went to it, hawking the blinky out of the bottom of the floor, whapping it over his shoulder. He snickered on the blinky and shone it round the ground about the watch tour in case there were anything either they were forgotten. He was just one round to the side of the ruin when he heard twa voices and a vehicle door slam shut. He looked with a pretty yelk and stuck at the light off, frozen to the spot. The voices was coming for the old ha, nae distance of wa, and he recognised them at once. It was the twa men. They were just getting out of their van.